The Warrior Soul podcast is written, edited, and produced by me, Chris Albert. Our mission is to provide tools, tactics, strategies, and ideas that help the U.S. military veteran community to show up as the wisest, strongest, most capable versions of themselves in the civilian world. If you're not a veteran, stick around because anything we talk about will most certainly apply to you as well. This podcast is made possible with the help of F-Bomb Nutrition. They make delicious packets of fats that you can carry around anywhere with you in little portable packets. They make macadamia nut butters. They mix them up with chocolate. They mix them up with sea salt. They mix them up with coconut butter. They're absolutely delicious, and they're really good for you. They don't have any sugar. They also make a lot of cheese snacks. They make meat sticks, and it's just a great company. These guys send packages of this stuff to the troops who are on the front lines overseas to supplement their MREs, and we didn't ask them to do that. They just did that on their own initiative. Really great company. If you want to get 20% off your first order of F-bombs, head over to www.droppingfbomb.com and use the code WARRIORSOUL at checkout. This podcast is also brought to you with the help of Save the Brave. SaveTheBrave.org is a 501c3 charity for veterans. They run camaraderie events that include fishing, golfing. They also do a lot of work with Gold Star families. And unlike a lot of other organizations, their board doesn't take a salary. Really great organization that is doing amazing work. So go and check them out at SaveTheBrave.org. With that, thank you guys so much. Let's get into today's programming. This is Chris Albert, and I'm here to remind you of one thing. Someday, you're going to die. Now, that's not some morbid statement or scary idea. It's solid fact. Your time here on this earth is limited. And we need to be reminded of this as much as possible for one simple reason. To live your best life while you can. This is the Warrior Soul Podcast. What's going on, guys? Today's interview is a way for me to combine two things that have affected my life very heavily. One is a very positive thing, and the other one is a pretty negative thing, and that is jiu-jitsu and autoimmune disease. My guest today is a man named Greg McIntyre. Greg is a jiu-jitsu black belt. He also was a professional fighter for a while. He got all the way up to the WEC. He was a very promising professional fighter, and he had a crazy early career. But along the way, he got ulcerative colitis, and the colitis was so bad and his colon was so affected that he had to have his colon removed. And so now he has what's called a J pouch. He doesn't have to walk around with a colostomy bag or anything like that, but it's affected his life greatly. But the thing about it is this: Greg never let that break him. He never let that destroy him. He has a mindset that I think more people need to emulate. He is a very strong individual, and what you're going to really get from this episode of the podcast is that no matter what happens to you in life, you can always use it to make you stronger. It's not necessarily good. It's not necessarily bad, but it's only bad if you look at it that way. You can utilize these events, these horrible things that could potentially happen to you, to actually make you into a better, stronger, wiser individual. And that's what Greg's done. We had a great conversation. Greg is an instructor down at Victory MMA in San Diego. That's the gym that Jocko owns along with Dean Lister and a few other people. And he is definitely at the top of that field. His Instagram is outstanding. If you're trying to learn jiu-jitsu, if you're trying to understand jiu-jitsu moves a little bit better, he does a really great job. And I think more people need to follow him on Instagram. So definitely check him out. I'll have all of the links up on the show notes to be able to do so. And with that, I'm going to stop, flap my gums over here, and let's get into this outstanding conversation with Mr. Greg McIntyre. Greg, man, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Chris.
Dude, I first heard you on Jocko's Grounded podcast and heard a bit about your story, heard a bit about your fight career, and a bit about something we're going to talk about in a little bit, which is your autoimmune disease. But right. For the audience at home, you know, could you give us just a quick 2-minute synopsis of who you are and where you're coming from?
Yeah, I'm from San Diego, and I grew up here. I wasn't born. I was born in L.A., but I grew up here since I was tiny. And I started wrestling, got into jiu-jitsu, and found out I had that autoimmune disease. I don't know how much you want to know about my background, but that actually played a huge part in my development, like in my 20s there. And then I continued to compete in jiu-jitsu and MMA, things like that, and then started a career as an x-ray technologist at the hospital and started a family here. So that's the short version.
Nice. What made you get into wrestling, man?
You know, as I mentioned to Jocko, like I was forced into doing things because my older brother was doing them in the beginning, because a single mom, and when my older brother was doing something, then I was sort of along for the ride. So he was in a BMX racing, and I hated every minute of it. And so as soon as he started wrestling in high school, at that point I was in junior high, I wanted to do it too. And then we found like a youth program. And then immediately I was like a fish to water in wrestling. I did really well and I kept winning. So it gave me some confidence at a time where I needed it in junior high. And so I stuck with that. And then I wrestled after junior high, wrestled in high school, did well there. And then got into jiu-jitsu. It's just sort of a natural progression, wrestling to jiu-jitsu. And we had some lucky options here in San Diego, because a lot of the Brazilians, a lot of the good ones, the talented ones, they come here because they like the climate and the fruit or whatever, the beach, you know. And so back, there's a lot more now than there was then. I'm talking 1999 is when I started. Wow. Jiu-jitsu. And I started with Fabio Santos jiu-jitsu. He's a Hicks and Gracie black belt. Mm-hmm. Great guy. He was my initial instructor, and he was the most legitimate instructor in San Diego for obvious reasons. And he's a red and black coral belt now, and he still teaches here. He's awesome. I go and visit him now and then. And I started there and just jumped into a couple MMA fights, sort of unprepared, and went on from there.
That's cool. You know, the thing about wrestling, I wrestled in high school too. I don't think there's another sport in high school that kids could do that does what wrestling does, like instilling self-discipline and, you know, self-reliance and making sure you got to make weight and the conditioning and the practice and all of the stuff you got to deal with. I mean, it's just such an outstanding sport for kids to get into.
Oh, I agree completely. Did you wrestle?
Yeah, I wrestled. Yeah. I'm from Connecticut. I wrestled from high school in,
right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've had that conversation a few times with my buddies that wrestled, and I couldn't agree more. I hope my kids wrestle. I'll try to trick them into it, make them think it's their idea, get them wrestling if I can. But yeah, I think it's a combination of things. It's an individual sport. So you're wrestling, you're out there on the mat, and it's not like your team lost. It's like you got your ass kicked. So that is a little different, you know, for a kid. like in a good way, whether you win and it's really great or you lose, like it's doing something to your brain at that age that other sports, I don't think can do, you know? And then you mentioned cutting weight. Cutting weight's huge. I mean, especially at an age where you're just so impetuous and immature, you know, and you're depriving yourself of food and even water for a period of time just so you can make weight. Cutting weight will make you mentally tough like no other thing can. So, yeah, those two things that wrestling brings to the table that I think other sports that you do in high school really don't.
Yeah, and it's like you either make the weight or you don't, or you perform on the mat or you don't. There's no right. Judgment, nothing like that. It's all on you.
Yeah.
And you can't blame anybody else, right?
Yeah.
Now, when you talk about jiu-jitsu and Southern California, yeah, you're right. We're really blessed down here as far as things go. I mean, San Diego and then Huntington Beach and a lot of these other areas, they seem to be like hotbeds. How'd you first hear about jiu-jitsu? Was it through like UFC? Was it through the Gracies? Was it on your own? Did you just run into it?
Yeah, it was early on. I was more interested in fighting than I was jiu-jitsu, because jiu-jitsu really wasn't a thing like it is now. Now it's just so popular and common. But back then we were going to Blockbuster, which doesn't really exist anymore, to get video to watch the UFC fights, the early UFC fights, watching Hoist Gracie. And then if you watched enough of them, it quickly became obvious that jiu-jitsu was the grappling art that was dominating all the others until it eventually evolved into a true mixed martial arts where everybody kind of was disciplined and understood jiu-jitsu on some level. But yeah, so I was watching Hoist Gracie and I wanted to do that. I didn't know that they had jiu-jitsu separate until I learned of, I think I came across some Hensel Gracie VHS tape. And then I realized, oh, yeah, this is cool. You could just do jiu-jitsu separately, just like wrestling, and not jump into a fight right away and learn that. So I got some tapes, some of those Hensel Gracie VHS tapes. And then when I graduated high school, I learned that Fabio Santos was in town here in San Diego. And I went and started training there.
And what was that like? Like, was, you know, walking into his school the first time, were there a lot of people there? Was there a good mix of people, or was it intimidating?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was, but I just remember being so excited. I remember just like, okay, I knew I didn't really want to wrestle in college after high school and cut all the way. I was more interested in something like this. And so it was just like, oh, this is really what I want. And it's right here. It's close to home. And there was a good mix of people. Everybody was cool for the most part. You're always going to get maybe one person in the gym that's a jerk or something like that. But generally speaking, people that train jiu-jitsu, they're cool. You know, they want to help you and they have their egos in check, you know? And so I went in and everybody was just immediately helping me out. It was intimidating because I didn't understand what they're doing. The objectives are totally different than they are in wrestling. But, and then, so I just used my wrestling because that's all I had. And then, Fabio Santos would stick Dean Lister on me and Jeff Higgs, who are now longtime friends of mine. And they would submit me a whole bunch of times. And I mean, it was, geez, 20 years ago now, but I remember enjoying that. I remember smiling in a way that like, I can't believe this guy submitted me a bunch of times. Like almost like incredulity, you know, like to where like, I need to learn this, like this is cool. You know, I didn't think someone could do that to me and they did because I was always successful in wrestling and this is just a totally different animal. And then I was addicted immediately. And I made a bunch of friends there. And yeah, it was great.
That's awesome. Yeah, my first time I got into jiu-jitsu was 3 years ago I walked into school, and back then I was a power lifter. I was a lot bigger than I am now. I was about 200 pounds. I could deadlift 600 pounds. And I go in the first day, I got broken in half by a 14-year-old kid. I was like, oh man, maybe just lifting inanimate objects for the past, 15 years wasn't making me a more capable human. Right.
Right. Yes, strength and talent doesn't count for a whole lot, especially when you're a zero belt. You just went in there, you're going to get tapped out. And and it's either going to make you leave and not come back or get addicted and learn the art. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So you started training there, and then you get into fighting. When did you make the decision that you said you wanted to fight from the beginning? Had you already decided that you were going to jump into a fight from there, like when you walked into the school?
No, I didn't. I knew I wanted to. It was always sort of in the back of my head. I never had a specific plan as to how that was going to happen or anything like that. It just sort of happened. I just have watched the VHS tapes, and I think that was cool. And I had some anger issues, so it was a good fit. I wanted to, at that age, I did. And then I started training, and it was like right when I started training at five. I already had some wrestling experience, but right when I started training jujitsu, like weeks after, my cousin had called me up, and he knew of some event up in Los Angeles that, I mean, they were letting guys fight, and they were looking for guys like to fight because not many were raising their hand at the time. And then I'll drive up. And the event was the next day. He called me that night, and the event was the next night. And so I drove up. It was in San Pedro, and I did that. And it was good fun. I mean, it was something that, like, when you're older, you would ask like 50 extra questions, and you'd probably turn it down and wait for the more perfect opportunity. But I was at that age to where I was like, let's do this.
I used to live in Pedro, man. That's an interesting area to be driving up to a fight, because it's like the part area of Los Angeles. And it's kind of like what you would think about in the movies, where there's a bunch of like guys in a smoky room or something like that.
It was exactly like that.
That's crazy, man. That must've been nuts for a 19-year-old kid.
It was pretty nuts. I mean, it was fun though. I mean, I had family, like my brother came up, and he actually jumped in to one of the fights, and it was really informal. Like there's this like balcony area, and everybody would come up and like, all right, who's your, they'd write down the names, and they'd start pairing people up. And then, within an hour after they paired you up with somebody, you're fighting that person. Not like you knew your opponent ahead of time. You just show up and raise your hand like, yeah, I want to try this. And then you did it. And it was cool. I had a good experience, and then just even more wanted to learn the discipline, want to learn how to fight, and learn jiu-jitsu specifically. Yeah.
Wow. And who was the guy you were fighting?
There were a few, actually. There was, guy's last name was DeWay, and then, John Piero was one guy that was sort of the champion at the time there. And then, Javier Vasquez, I mentioned on the Jocko podcast, and Tracy Hess, I remember him. He later became, he started there the same time I did, and then went on and was pretty successful with some pro MMA fights. And so those four, there might have been another one, but yeah, after that one time, I had a good time. And then every time there was an event for like that next year or so, he would call me, and then I'd just drive up that weekend and fight.
And back then, was there like a trajectory from whatever organization that was to the UFC? Was there like a set trajectory? Did anybody know how to do that?
No. I mean, even like I said, even the UFC was sort of underground. Yeah. Most states didn't allow the UFC, and it was just a blockbuster VHS thing at the time. People didn't know what the UFC was generally. Like, even at this event in Pedro, just as an example for how early on it was, the guys that started the Tap Out clothing brand, mm-hmm. and this is, like I said, 20 years ago, they were just selling t-shirts out of the back of their car trying to start their brand. And then fast forward 8 years later, and they had, I think it was 2008, they had a $100 million year, you know, mm-hmm. it was like a big business all of a sudden. Went from when I met them back then, just trying to sell some t-shirts out of the back of a Cadillac, to serious business. So it grew quick, and they grew with the sport. But at that time, no, there was no direct line to the UFC or anything. UFC was, it was still at the stage where different disciplines were competing against each other. So it wasn't like they had these like feeder programs. They were just grabbing, I don't know, well-known guys, and you had to be connected somehow, I guess, to get in there.
And what were the rules like at that point? Was there rules on what you could wear and what you bring into the ring, and any rules about like hitting in the head and things like that?
In the UFC?
No, in the organization you were fighting there. In
They had rules. Like, at first it started to where it was more of like a pancreation deal. But like I said, the rules were really loose. Like, it was no gloves, which was weird. And because the gloves in the UFC originally, like, people started wearing those not to protect the person being hit. It was to protect the bones in your hand, because mm-hmm. a lot of fights would just end early because someone would break their hand, because the bones in your head are harder than the bones in your hand, and people would get broken hands. And so that's why they started wearing gloves. But early on here, it was supposed to be open hand strikes, just like the old school Boss Rudin pancreation rules, open hand strikes to the head and closed hand to the body, and everything else goes submissions and takedowns and all that stuff. And but then, like, if someone were, it wasn't watched closely, someone were to close hand punch somebody, they would just kind of let it go. I mean, it was that event was run just sort of, it was for entertainment, you know what I mean?
I had Boss on. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, man. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I had Boss on the show, and he's come out, he doesn't like gloves.
Right.
He leads to more TBI. What do you think about that?
Leads to more what?
More
brain injury?
Brain injury, yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a good argument for that. Like boxing, for example, the gloves are much bigger than MMA gloves, like little fingerless 4 ounce MMA gloves are, you could hit someone a lot harder than a big padded boxing gloves. Yet with the big padded boxing glove, you hit someone and you have to hit them repeatedly until they go down, which means you have this accumulative damage to your brain, rather than getting hit one time, either going down or getting a laceration or something like that. So as far as your brain goes, boxing and football, because you have the helmet, are more dangerous than MMA, you know, because you're protecting the brain just enough to where it could just keep taking a beating, you know, which is obviously not good. Your brain's in there, it's suspended in a little bit of fluid, and it's just bouncing around. And if you get hit one time, it may look bad in MMA. And like someone gets cracked and they have a big laceration, and there's blood, and they go down, you know, and oh no, and that's a big deal. But in boxing, you see, you get just repeatedly pummeled and they're still standing. That's much worse for their brain. You just don't see what's going on the inside. So yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree with them. Although, those little gloves are a good compromise, because, like I said, if you didn't have them, a lot of these great technical fights with great fighters would just end way too early. We wouldn't get to see the real result, who's the better fighter, because someone's hand would be broken, you know. So that's the downside. And then obviously there's the the finger poke problem too, you know, with the, the open hand. So there's no perfect solution, you know, to the gloves, but the 4 ounce gloves, I think, I mean, it works for now. Yeah.
So you get through that, you do that initial fight, and then you come back and you're training. And what were you thinking at the time as far as things go? Were you thinking this is what you wanted to do, become a professional fighter, or were there other things on your mind at the time?
Yeah, I had no idea. I was so immature at that age to where I wasn't thinking forward very much. I was enjoying that. I wanted to do that. I did take a few classes at a junior college. I was like psychology and I think some kinesiology classes and stuff like that. But had no idea what I wanted to do. No purpose or anything. I just knew that I was having fun doing this and I was going to continue to do it. And then I was hit with that that aggressive autoimmune disease at like within a year later. So it was like right when I was 20 years old, it started to get real bad.
Yeah. So that's a big reason why we have you on today. You and I suffer from the same autoimmune disease, ulcerative colitis. Mm-hmm. And for those of you at home, ulcerative colitis is similar to Crohn's disease. And basically what happens is your immune system starts attacking your intestinal tract and leads to a whole host of different problems, loss of blood, extreme pain, anemia, and a lot of different things. When that first started happening, what were your initial symptoms how did it impact you at first?
Yeah, at first it was just a lot of the same symptoms that you just mentioned, of like abdominal cramping, and then I was crapping some blood but you know, it's with these autoimmune diseases, there's like flare ups, and then it sort of like sometimes it'll just go away for no good reason. You could follow a specific diet, it won't really matter. Certain things you eat could make it worse, but if this autoimmune disease wants to flare up, it's gonna do its thing, and then it'll just go away in the same way that it came. And then obviously some people have it a lot worse than others, but yeah, I had those same symptoms, and then I was just sort of naively hoping, because it would come and go at the time, like intermittently, I was naively hoping like, it'll go away. You know, it's a temporary thing. And it wasn't going away. It was like progressively getting worse. And then I was losing weight because, like you said, this autoimmune disease, it attacks, it's your own immune system attacking. Like as if you hurt your arm or your elbow or something, and you tweaked it doing jujitsu, and it gets swollen up, right? And that swelling is your immune system's reaction to the injury. And so that's basically what's happening to your intestines, except for there was no injury. You know, there was no attacker or anything like that. It was just your immune system freaking out and causing this inflammation process, like unnecessarily, you know? And yeah, it's just, I was in denial. I just tried to ignore it and hope it went away, and it did not.
Yeah. When I think back on it, a lot of the symptoms that came up, like for years, there was like blood on the toilet paper. There was things going on, but I was like ignoring them because I just thought it was just, you know, something normal, something that happened and things like that.
Right.
And then eventually, I mean, it just set in. And all of a sudden it was like, holy, you're spending hours on the toilet. You're running back and forth in pain all the time. And right, all of a sudden it's got you in its grips and you don't know how to get out of it. And you're trying to figure out what the hell is going on.
Yeah. I mean, and then as it gets worse, not only are you going to the bathroom more frequently, like crazy frequently, talking, you know, 25 times in the day, you got to run to the restroom, but the sense of urgency gets worse and worse. And that's where you can't tolerate that anymore. That's just that feeling anxiety where you're gonna shit your pants, and you're mid conversation, all of a sudden it just grabs you with a cramp or whatever, and you got to run, and then there's, you know, blood and everything. It's just, at some point you just realize that this is serious, and I need to take care of it. And by that time, I had already been competing for a little while, trying to just manage it. And, but it got to the point where, the doctor, I just went to one appointment, and the doctor's like, you've lost a lot of weight and you look horrible and you need to be admitted right now. So he just admitted me into the hospital. And then I saw another doctor, and he's like, that your colon is just destroyed. We need to take that thing out of there. So they ended up removing my entire colon.
So they did a colectomy right off the bat.
Right. It was bad. He said it was just like, it looked like I'd been chewed up, you know? And then I saw, before it was that severe, I saw some pictures of when they did the scope, and it was like, almost like those images you see at the dentist where these are healthy gums and these are like gingivitis gums, where I had like gingivitis colon, you know, and it was like all red and bleeding and stuff like that. And he said it was just like the whole thing needed to go, you know, the whole colon, which is, if you don't know, like colon is basically your entire large intestine minus the very end of it. But yeah, so they took that out, and your colon, you kind of need it, you know? So they had to replace it in some way. So they made what's called the J pouch. Have you heard of this, Chris?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The J pouch. And they take like 60 centimeters of your small bowel ileum, make it into a J. And then, in the meantime, while that thing is healing, you have an ileostomy bag, which is your intestine, which you could actually see sticking out of your abdomen, and you have a bag that you change. So for months I dealt with that, and then had the second part of the surgery where they connected that J pouch and had all the plumbing put together.
Hey guys, I hope you're getting a lot out of this interview. You know, the Warrior Soul podcast is built with the mission to empower its listeners to live absolutely epic lives. And that's why we recently created a group called the Warriors Obituary Society. This group is built to empower its members to live epic lives worthy of epic obituaries. And it starts with an 8-week development program. And with this development program, what you're going to do is you're going to outline a vision for your life. You're going to get very specific about what you want, because without that specificity, you don't know where you're going and you don't know what you're doing. From there, we help our members to develop specific goals, objectives that they are going to push toward, and that their fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society are going to hold them accountable to. From there, we're getting down into specifics. We're going to help you to develop and customize your own personal fitness and nutrition plan to help to fuel your body and fuel your mind for the quest ahead. From there, we're going to work on your personal finances. We're going to help you to knock down debt. We're going to help you to start saving money and to create a plan so that you can start investing in your dreams. Then we're going to get into your business and career. We're going to help you to develop the skills that you need to develop yourself so that you can have a major impact in the field you choose. If you choose to go into business, we're going to help you to set up the foundations that you need to create your own company and get started on your path in life. From there, we're going to be working on your relationships. We're going to help you to develop a world-class network. And all along the way, you're going to have your fellow members of the Warriors Obituary Society pushing you in every single area. We meet once a week over a live call, and we're constantly communicating over our own private forum on Slack. We don't do anything over social media, and that's because I don't want anybody feeling like anyone's looking over their shoulders, and I don't want you exposed to the crazy, distracting alerts that you get on Facebook and some of the other social media platforms. Normally, programs like this cost thousands of dollars. This one does not. For the price, it is the best development program on the internet. And that's because our mission here at Warrior Soul is to empower people to get more out of life so that they can in turn make the world a better place. We've got a great mix of active duty military, U.S. military veterans, and civilians in this group. We wanted to keep it really eclectic so that we get a lot of different types of views up there and a lot of different people with different areas of expertise. If you think that this is something that would be of interest to you and that this is something that could empower you to live your absolute best life, head over to www.warriorobituarysociety.com. That's www.warriorobituarysociety.com, and you can sign up today. And if you have any questions about it, just reach out to me at chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. That's chris@warriorsoulagoge.com. I'm happy to even sit down with you for a phone call for a few minutes to see if the group is right for you. I look forward to seeing you guys in there, and let's get back to this awesome interview. I want to ask you this because, you know, you went from, and this is a big aspect of having something like that, but you're on this trajectory. You're intensely going after this goal. And then all of a sudden this thing happens and you're put from a position of strength to a position where your body basically can't perform a basic function.
Right.
And what was the mental impact for you? What was going on in your mind at the time?
It was horrible. I mean, looking back, there's a silver lining. It just calmed me down as a person, and it checked my sort of sense of reality and ego in a way. But at the time, yeah, it's just, you go from, yeah, I want to fight, and I want to, I'm 20 years old, and you're trying to decide what you want to do in life, and you have this feeling that you have plenty of time to do that, and then suddenly your only job is to get better, to not be really sick. That's your job. You know, you're not even thinking about any of this stuff at all. You just want to be well, and that's good enough for you. And it's a real gut check, especially at that age. It was rough. I didn't know what to think about it. I was grumpy most of the time.
Yeah. And obviously while you had the ileostomy, you probably couldn't train really. You couldn't fight, couldn't roll or anything like that, right?
No. I remember visiting class and just watching the guys roll because I missed it so much. But no, not only was the ileostomy bag in the way to where I couldn't roll, but I was still too sick. It was still pretty bad.
Yeah. I'm very fortunate in a lot of ways that I haven't had to have my colon removed. But the thing about this is it's like a roller coaster, because what happens is you get really sick and then you make a couple of changes. Maybe you go into remission for a bit and things get better. And then life seems like it's good. You're going along and you think, oh, there's this part of your brain that says, well, maybe I don't have the disease anymore. Maybe it's gone.
Right.
And then all of a sudden it just freaking comes back at the worst time possible. And every time it comes back a little bit stronger and it comes back in a little bit more of a ferocious mentality. And yeah. Every flare up's worse than the last one. And you know, this last one I had, my flare ups tend to get activated by stress. So I had a couple of friends who passed away recently. I had one really close friend who passed away over the summer. And then after that, you know, I, all of a sudden the flare just happened and I tried to ignore it for like the first couple of months or first couple of weeks and act like it wasn't there. And then right. It just got so bad. I was getting dizzy and like passing out, tired all the time, losing so much blood. I had to go to the VA. I had to do something.
Right.
And the drugs they put you on, like prednisone, they have a severe impact on your mentality, on your energy, on everything. Mm-hmm. And it's been a battle. It's been a real, real battle. And I can't imagine, you know, for what you were going through to have that thing taken out. And how long did you have the ileostomy for?
It was just under 4 months. And then they reconnected. But I was glad to get rid of that ileostomy, but that didn't mean that my problems were gone. You know, still to this day, I mean, that was years ago, but still to this day, I have a lot of issues. That's why when you first contacted me, I was asking you about how your medication, think you're on a biologic type medication, how that was working, because it's still, there's this autoimmune thing going on in the pouch that they built. And there's some severe ulcers in there. And I have an appointment about a week from now. And it's tough because a lot of the stuff that works for ulcerative colitis patients doesn't necessarily work for what they call pouchitis, which is like once you have your colon removed and you have the pouch and that thing's inflamed, there's no real studies showing that that it works the same on pouchitis as it does ulcerative colitis. So I'm just waiting. I actually read recently that there's this one called Entyvio that they did a study, and it seems like it works for people with a J pouch like myself. So I'm gonna ask a lot of questions about that once I see my GI doc. But it's still a struggle.
What types of medications do they have you on right now? Because they have the different classes. They have the corticosteroids, the ASAs, and then there's the biologics, right?
Right. And so for me, like they tried some antibiotics because a lot of the stuff, when the autoimmune system like flares up, like it can create the inflammation and conditions for bacteria. I'm not a doctor, know how exactly it works, but there were certain antibiotics that they had me on, some strong ones that would help, you know, until they didn't work anymore. Like my body would adapt to those things quick. And so I don't mess with that anymore. And for a short period of time, they had me on some anti-inflammatories, like these for your intestines, like Lialda. It's like this time release. And by the time it gets to where I need it to get, I think it's more effective for Crohn's patients. And again, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what I'm talking about, but my doctor seemed to agree with me that by the time it gets to where I need it, which is at the very bottom at the pouch, there's not much medicine left. You know, it's already done its thing in the upper intestine where I don't really have a problem. So I stopped taking that. So really I'm on nothing right now. I'm just sort of dealing with it. And I might try, I just don't know about the side effects of some of these new biologic drugs, but I'm gonna have my doctor explain it to me in a couple weeks. But yeah, it's a struggle, but it's, you know, after you contacted me and I discovered your podcast, I listened to one of your short ones and they were really good. So one of them was Chasing Happiness or something along those lines. And then one interview with a guy, last name Levi. Both of them good. And one thing you mentioned in the short is just, and I'm sure you've mentioned it repeatedly, is just sort of finding meaning in the struggle. And whether it's ulcerative colitis or, like you said, you lost some people close to you, some loved ones, and I have too. And you could dwell on that or you sort of embrace it because not just for the sake of having like a positive attitude in the face of like a tough time, but it's actually true. Like you become a stronger person, a better person because of these struggles. And after you've been through some stuff like this, you notice the people that haven't been through struggles and they're missing something, you know. It's almost like the the struggle and all, it gives your life meaning, gives you a little bit more fulfillment. So there is like a serious silver lining there to these struggles. You know, it's just not the good times are that much more precious, you know. Yep. But you also have this life experience that you carry with you, having dealt with this stuff. And I know you know more than I do about that, having been a veteran.
Yeah. And what I can say is that, you know, as far as ulcerative colitis goes, yeah, it's one of the worst things that's ever happened to me in my life, but it's also been a blessing. Because I, you know, my profession, I work in nutrition. I wouldn't know half the things that I know about nutrition had this never happened to me, because it ignited a curiosity in me to learn about digestion, to learn about gut bacteria, to learn about the system down there. And, you know, I really wouldn't be who I am today without it. And, you know, that's exactly what you're saying there. I mean, you, when things happen in your life, and things will happen no matter what, you got a choice, and that's either to embrace the struggle or let the struggle define you, right? Let it break you. And if you choose to embrace it, there's nothing in the world that can break you. There really isn't. And it is a choice. It's a matter of choosing to say, I'm going to look at this thing as happening for me rather than to me. And I'm going to use this to make me stronger, to make me a better person, and to turn me into the person I need to become in order to get through it. Right.
Yeah. And it really is true that it does make you a mentally tougher, stronger, better, more understanding person. It's not just that. I think people hear these types of conversations and think that they sort of summarize it in their head as just have a positive attitude, you know, when you're going through tough times. But no, I mean, if you talk to people that have, you know, been to war, or they've had to overcome cancer or something like that, they don't want to do that again. But at the same time, very few of them like regret their experience, because like you said, it made them who they are, you know, and in some way it makes their life more fulfilling, having been through these tough times, through these struggles.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly. When you finally got through that and you're dealing with the disease now, did you end up going back to fighting? Did you continue that trajectory at all, did you find it was time to put it down?
Yeah, no, I went back. I was young enough to where I healed up, and I never completely, like I said, to this day, I've never been 100%, and I never will. I'm like constantly dealing with it. But after they got the colon out of there, it was a big difference. Like a lot of the problem was removed. But yeah, so I went back and started competing, and I won a few fights, and which got some attention. So I ended up on this TV show. It must be like 9-10 years old now, something like that. And it was the old Versus channel, which is now Fox Sports 2, and Tap Out, the clothing brand, had their own TV show, and they featured a fighter. And I was one of the featured fighters on the show. And then they basically follow you. They follow your training and a little bit about your personal life. And then at the end, there's a fight, you know, and whether you win or lose, it's the end of the show. And then I ended up having a fight there, and I won the fight on the show, and it was good fun. Those guys are great. And so I got invited to fight in the WEC, which has now been absorbed by the UFC, because the UFC used to be just like welterweight and up, and they didn't have any lightweights, but it's grown so much that there's so much of an appetite for fighting, and even the lighter guys, that they absorbed WEC, and now it's basically just part of the UFC. And yeah, so I had a lot of fights after, not a lot, but I had a good handful before I ended up stopping. I didn't even necessarily stop fighting because I was done really. Like my last fight, I did well. I won, but I was getting older. Right after that fight, I had a minor knee surgery and another minor one on the other knee. And then, as you get older, your options, feel like they get more limited, and started a family. And, I had to, take my career a little more seriously, which meant there's a little less time for training. I never quit training, but it was, there was this point to where, it's no longer a singular pursuit. You know, you're not just training to fight. I gotta balance. It's just one of the many things that I'm doing. And there were other things in life that I wanted to try out too.
Yeah. I tell people this all the time. If you're at home and you're in your early 20s and you're trying to figure things out, don't be in a rush to go get settled in something, because you have this set period in your life where you get to do crazy shit, like try to become a fighter or join the Marine Corps or try to become a Navy SEAL or try to start a business while you're living off of ramen noodles and living on somebody's couch. Like, go do that shit, because once you get to, you know, 28, 29, 30, then those options start to come off the table, right? So you got to do that shit while you're young. And it's a perfect example here, right?
Right. Yeah. Now I have a family to take care of, and I have a mortgage. And if I didn't have a mortgage, I'd have rent. I can't suddenly stop time and go back to school for something I'm interested in. I mean, you can. I mean, it's not to say that people do pull this off, you know, and it's really hard. And I've heard stories of just like single moms, like going back to school, whether it's online or whatever, and getting a degree. There, you can. It's just more difficult, and you're just your options are a little more limited. Yeah. So yeah, I completely agree with you. When you're young, try some stuff. You know, don't get trapped into this sort of timeline or what people typically do at a certain stage in their life. Just do what you want to do, because that's the time where you have all the freedom in the world to fail at it, and you may not end up doing that particular thing, but now you know what you don't want to do, and you're closer to what you do want to do. Yeah,
exactly. So you started transitioning and you got into, became an X-ray tech, right?
Yeah. So that was part of, just like you said, you learned about nutrition and different things, having been through the disease. And I was in the hospital so often, having these different tests done. Like there was one I had to do a few times where you drink this nasty barium. They do a little different today, but they take pictures as it's moving through your intestine, and it takes some time. Like it would be, for me, it was as long as like a 5-hour transit time for this stuff to go from my stomach all the way down. So I'm sitting there with the technologist, and he's like listening to music, and this is what, 2004, something like that, back then, and seemed to enjoy his job. And I also was thinking, I need a job with some insurance. I'm going to have some issues the rest of my life. You know, and so working in healthcare sort of made sense. I asked the technologist while I was a patient, a bunch of questions, and then he pointed me in the right direction. And then once I was healthy enough, I just went on that path. I took some prereq classes and then put my name on the list. Eventually got called to, after my prereqs were done, to get in this X-ray program. And then it was a 2-year program to where you have to put in about 2,000 hours of internship, like on the job, like working on top of the school portion of it. And then I did that, and it turned out to be a great, great career for me, because I work for a Sharp hospital, and it's a good gig, good insurance, pretty good pay. And I get, you know, time off, and it still allows me to clock out and go teach jiu-jitsu classes after work and enjoy my family. And it works for me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I have a friend who works over at Sharps and her husband actually trains at Victory, I think.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, she loves it down there. She loves it down there. And I also read you're a full stack developer too, right?
Yeah, I was, they call it, a junior or whatever the term is for beginner developer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to a boot camp I like learning new things. The older I get, the more curious I am. And so I went to this, boot camp. It was pretty intense for a few months and learned how to code. And it was intense. It was just X-ray I could do with my eyes closed. Jiu-jitsu I've been doing for years, it's pretty easy for me. So to do something new like that and to be like a white belt again, mm-hmm. was interesting. And weird at the same time, to where I was not fully enjoying it. Like I was struggling just to do a decent job, you know. It didn't really come natural to me, but I stuck through it, and yeah, it's cool. It's just another thing on the side. Just want to that I'd have more options, you know, so more things I could do.
Yeah, the reason I bring that up is because there's a lot of programs out there for veterans now. Mm-hmm. Those types of boot camps where you can go, you can learn to code, and that brings a lot of options to the table, because in today's economy, I mean, that's basically the means of production, right? Knowing how to code, knowing how to put
right.
that together, and full stack developers, they earn a lot of money when they get business and when they get into companies and things like that. And that's one of the things. If you're an entrepreneur who's trying to start a business today's day and age, you need a full stack developer on your team. If you are going to be looking for money, it's just one of those things that investors will look for. And really important.
Yeah. And every year that's going to be more and more true going forward.
Exactly.
That's just the way it's going to be. But yeah, it's conveniently they have these boot camps that teach you more of what you need to know for the job, and as opposed to getting a computer science degree from a university for 4 years, and you could make the same amount of money, you know, if you put in the work and you're good at it. I'm not doing that right now. I decided to stick with healthcare, but yeah, it's a great option. It's really interesting stuff. It's like, it's not what I thought going into it, but it's just, you have a goal and you're basically figuring out how to solve a problem. There are like a bunch of puzzles, you know, and you write the code and figure out how to solve the puzzle, how to put it together. It's pretty cool.
And you're still instructing jiu-jitsu and working down there. What is that like now? Because, you know, you go through this transition, and one of the things I've said in the past is that, you know, being a man is about going through these stages of slaying dragons. So first, your first job as a man is to learn how to slay dragons. And then your second job is to actually go out there and slay dragons. And then the third job is to go out there and teach slaying dragons. And part of becoming a man is knowing when to transition between the three of those. Right. So now you're teaching people how to slay dragons. How's that for you, man?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, there's a saying that it's teaching jiu-jitsu is like teaching snakes how to bite you, you know, and that's somewhat true. Like your students are always improving and making you better, because they're coming after you. They want to prove that they're ready for that next promotion or whatever, or that they just want to show that they're getting better. So it keeps me on my toes and keeps me getting, because jiu-jitsu just never ends. Once I got my black belt, the sport was evolving so fast. I still felt like a beginner, and I still do. There's so much to learn, and I'm sure there's a move invented today that didn't exist yesterday, or some counter to a counter. You know what I mean? And and I love it. I love teaching. I teach right now 6 classes a day normally. I mean 6 classes a week and sometimes more. But on top of my other job, that's kind of enough. Yeah.
Yeah. I was on your Instagram and you got some great stuff up there. You're
thanks.
Going over this sweep with you grab the sleeve, you stick your leg around the arm, mm-hmm. and then you reach for the leg and you hoist the guy up. And I looked at your Instagram and then I went to class that night and tried it and it mm-hmm. worked. And I was
awesome. Yeah.
You guys, awesome. Yeah. Those videos are outstanding, man.
Oh, thanks. And that is so cool. And that's another thing that that wasn't true when I started. Like now we have this explosion of information and this library of jiu-jitsu just sitting there for free on YouTube. And not all of it is accessible to beginners. You still have to go to class. Like when you get a little more experienced, you're going to be able to break these things down and just grab them from YouTube and use them in class like you did. But yeah, you could learn just about anything, which is awesome if you have the right attitude.
Yeah. And that's one of those things because, you know, everybody's got lives, right? They got to go out, they got to earn money. They've got responsibilities. You can't train, you know, all the time. So, you know, part of this I think is you have to take the opportunity to watch other people and see how what they're doing and see the techniques and things like that. And I think that's a big part of it. And like you said, we're kind of lucky this day and age because we have all this free information out there, all this stuff that's out there on the internet that we watch or YouTube through Instagram and things like that. And people need to take advantage of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And don't just watch it, like go try it like you did. Go try it. Cause that's really how you add it to your game, how you really learn it. You know, you could see it and feel like you understand it. But once you actually see that move or you learn from an instructor, you saw it online and then you go hit it, then there's some sort of emotional connection to where like, yes, this does work. And then all of a sudden that's a sweep of yours. That's one more thing, a tool in your toolkit that you could use. And so you have to actively go to class and try to do the move that you saw, which is not as easy as it sounds, because once you're competing with someone, they're trying to choke you. You know, you're going to do the things that you're most comfortable doing. You're not necessarily in the mindset, I'm going to try all these new things, you know. But yeah, just try things and maybe try some stuff that you didn't see online. Just if you feel like it's going to work, experiment with it. I remember hearing that one of the guys I used to watch a lot that I really enjoy watching is Leo Vieira. They call him Leozinho. Very good black belt from Brazil. And I remember an interview a long time ago where he said that he would go sit and watch the kids class because they were so creative and they were jumping around doing cargo passes. And then he would just take some of the things that they were doing and make them more technical and use them on a world-class level. So yeah, I always sort of thought that was cool and encouraged me to be more creative when I'm in there and just have fun training. If you try something new and you get your guard passed, I mean, no big deal. That's how you're going to learn a lot faster. Yeah. And my instructor, Dean Lister, he talks about that in the context of your guard. Like a lot of times in the beginning, you're tempted to keep your guard closed all the time.
Right.
And what that does is slow down your learning process. You open guard is a lot tougher than closed guard. If you have your guard closed, you could slow the person down, whether they're more advanced than you, and you feel like you're in some control, even if you just stay in that same position for the full 5-minute round, your guard is closed. You know, you have to open that guard and risk getting your guard pass, and you probably will get your guard pass. And then everything after that is usually bad news as a beginner. You're inside control, maybe mounts next, but that's how you're going to improve, is to open that guard and try some stuff and risk what's coming next. But those guys that are just, really competitive, and I am too, but their number one goal, every role, every time they go to class, is just to not lose. And they're going to learn real slow.
Yeah, that's something that I had to learn early on, was that, you know, don't worry about getting tapped out. Don't worry about especially because I started jiu-jitsu at 38 years old. So it was like, you know, if I'm rolling with a 20-year-old and I'm trying not to get tapped out, I'm going to get injured. Right. So one of the things I learned early on was like, tap early, tap often, and don't worry about it. It's not your training. Right. And that's what training is. You know, that's when you can get tapped out with minimal consequences. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's part of jiu-jitsu. Like it takes that level of humility to improve your jiu-jitsu. You got to check your ego and be willing to try some stuff and tap out in order to get better. The less you do that, the slower you're going to improve. And that's just the way it is. And you're exactly right. Just go in there, try some stuff, and tap out. And it sounds, it probably sounds cliche to a lot of people that are trained jiu-jitsu, but it's absolutely true that the more you tap and the more you learn, you know, and you, when you lose, you do learn every time.
Right. Exactly. And I've just gotten to the point now where I'm opening up my guard. I'm using a lot more like butterfly guard, and I'm learning so much more that way. And then just stick keeping with closed guard and trying to freeze everything. And you're so
right. Yeah.
So one final thing I want to get into here, because a lot of the guys who are listening, they're my age, they're, you know, 35 to 40, and they might be thinking about trying to get into something like jiu-jitsu, right? But they think, oh, I didn't start this when I'm 19. I didn't start this when I'm younger. What do you say to those old guys out there who are thinking about trying it out?
Oh, there's no downside, really. I mean, you may not be in the position to train as hard as you can and give up the rest of your life and just focus on training and become a world champion in a sport or something like that. But that's very few people that train jiu-jitsu. That's what their goal is, you know, but you're going to get all these other benefits from jiu-jitsu, whether it's the mentality that jiu-jitsu brings, all the different life metaphors that I'm sure you've heard before. You're going to get in shape and you're going to know how to defend yourself. There's no downside. And there's a quote from, I believe it's Chris Howder. He was one of the original American black belts under Horion. And he says, you're going to be somewhere in 10 years. You might as well be a black belt too. You know, so it's like, there's no real downside. Just go keep training. Just don't quit, you know, and then there's no way you're going to regret it.
Yeah. That's amazing. Where can people find you? I mentioned your Instagram before, and I highly suggest everybody go check out his Instagram, because there's so much good stuff on there. Where can people find you online? Where do you hang out the most?
I'm rarely on Facebook, but Instagram at Gregory McIntyre, or I think if you search Greg Train, you could find me. That's about it. I don't have a huge online presence. Instagram is where I'm at, but I'm at my gym teaching in San Diego, Victory. If any of you guys are out there and you're veterans, come by the gym and check it out. You're welcome to visit and train for free. We'll make it happen. Ask for me by name. As you probably know, Jocko is one of the owners of our gym, and we're happy to have you.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, Greg, number one, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. I know I reached out to you out of nowhere and was really interested in your story. And I think it's fascinating the journey you've taken, you know, and to have something like that happen and to have the resilience to keep going, to stay on top of this. And I know your battle's not over with this disease. Mine's not either, but it looks like you're in a great place to keep up the fight. And, you know, I want to just acknowledge you, because what you've done is exactly what I talked about before with slaying dragons. You've gone from learning how to slay dragons to slaying dragons yourself to teaching others and inspiring others to slay dragons. And I think that's the trajectory that all of us need to be on in some way, shape, or form, is to take what we learn in the world and to put it back out there to help other people. And I think that's amazing, man. And so thank you for coming on here and thank you for what you do.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And yeah, now that I know about your podcast, I already listened to a couple of them yesterday. Like I said, one short one, one of the interviews, and it's good stuff, like exactly the same type of stuff I'm interested in. And I'd like to stay in contact and
absolutely
hear how your journey is going with this UC.
And, absolutely, man. And we'll have to have you back on sometime soon, talk about your own progress and maybe talk a little bit more about jiu-jitsu.
Absolutely. And thank you. Thank you for your service and all of you veterans out there. Thank you very much for your service. Everybody in uniform in the military, you know, the world would fall apart without you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Well, everybody out there, hope you got a lot out of this episode. Like I said, if you are in jiu-jitsu or even thinking about jiu-jitsu, go check out Greg's Instagram because you'll learn a lot. You'll see a lot. And definitely if you're in the San Diego area, go and take him up on that offer. And if you're not in the San Diego area, go out there and find a place to train. Go out there and just take that first step. Try it out. Take that chance. Take that risk. And you get a lot out of it. And so I want to thank you guys so much for listening. And we will be back at you next week with some more awesome content. This is Chris and Greg, and we are out.
All right. Thanks, man.
All right. That was, I thought, an outstanding interview. I really like this guy. Greg is an inspiration for me. He's an inspiration for a lot of people in the martial arts community. And, you know, he's just an overall really good person. And that's the type of person I love to have here on the Warrior Soul podcast. Somebody who has a story like that, where they've stood up to something that seems like it's such a scary, awful thing. Trust me, I've been through it. But comes out the other end and tries to find the things that are going to make them a better person. And I think that's what Greg did. And that's what we should all try to emulate here. Highly suggest you guys check out Greg's Instagram. He's at Greg McIntyre. It's Greg. Let me just pull this up. I'm doing it while I'm recording it. So bear with me, guys. Bear with me, guys. It is at Greg, G-R-E-G. Gregory, at Gregory, GregoryMcintyre, right? Gregory McIntyre on Instagram. He's got a lot of really great instructional videos up there about jiu-jitsu, about martial arts. And of course, he is an instructor down at Victory MMA in San Diego. That's Jocko's gym, along with Dean Lister, and Echo is down there, and that's where they record that podcast and everything. So definitely go check that out. Grab some classes with Greg if you're in the area. Beyond that, guys, I want to thank you guys so much for all the support we've been getting. We tripled our download record last month. I can't tell you how awesome that is, because I've been working at this kind of silently for 3 years, not so silently, but kind of, you know, things had been kind of on a plateau for a long time. And when you're doing something like this, like, you never know if it's actually going to be a success, right? You put a lot of work into it. You try to push it forward when you can. And, you know, a lot of times you think this is going to be the thing that blows things up, right? And I've had some big names on here. I've had Grant Cardone. I've had a whole lot of Robert Greene, huge people, right? And always I'm like, man, this podcast is going to blow up so hard after this. But you know what? It doesn't, right? It's a slow, steady thing. And what you got to do is you got to keep working at it. You can't get frustrated. You got to wake up every day and you got to do the freaking work. And that's what I've done. It hasn't been easy, but you guys have responded. And that means that you're telling people about the show. That means that you're sharing the episodes out. And that means that you guys are on board, and I'm so happy about that. So I want to thank you guys so much, because without you, this podcast is nothing. And I want to say, let's keep up the momentum. My goal is to turn this into a top 25 podcast by the end of 2020. And to do that, I need you guys. I need you guys to keep sharing. I need you guys to write reviews on iTunes if you haven't done so yet. I can't tell you how much that helps whenever you write a review. And you're literally helping me to put this information into the ears of more veterans and more everyday people who need to hear this message. So please do that. As far as announcements, guys, you guys know where to go if you want to support us in other ways. You can head over to Warrior Soul Shop. That's warriorsoul.shop. You can buy yourself a t-shirt, PC gear. You can support yourself through the Warriors Obituary Society, our private mastermind. We talked about that toward the middle of the show. And then beyond that, man, just keep spreading the word, guys. I just started the Warrior Soul Academy. Basically, I took a lot of the writings that I've been working on over the past few years, a lot of the fitness writings that I've done, the business courses that I put together, the fitness courses that I put together. All that is up at warriorsoul.academy, warriorsoul.academy. Just figuring out ways to try to pay for bandwidth there. I've got products up there ranging from $1.99, I think one's $1.50, all the way up to products that are more expensive, that are like life-changing courses if you wanted to take advantage of those. So definitely check that out too. And with that, guys, thank you so much. I'll be back at you next week with another interview and some more awesome content. And get out there and live your best lives while you can. This is Chris Albert, and I am out.